All right, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Connection audio extravaganza this week. MWCConnection.com is their website. You can check us out, Blog Talk Radio, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher. They're working on a few things, so if you're on Stitcher, they're working on some things. So check out our website for the podcast. Of course, Jeremy Moss here, Matt Kennerly, who is always busy like I am most of the time, it seems like.
Living that grad school life.
Exactly. How's that going for your, not the golf topic right away, but you're doing your Fresno a little, what are you officially calling your, following the season with Fresno State?
Well, it's technically referred to as my MFA thesis. It's basically just a manuscript about the season.
Okay. So have you found your narrative yet of what you're doing?
Well, for those of you out there it's like Bizarro Friday Night Lights for anybody out there who's read Buzz Bissinger's book.
That's a good way to put it, I think, with how Fresno's going. I assume we'll get into this later, but it's 12-minute press conference. That's always exciting when there's nothing to ask.
Well, it's not that there's nothing to ask. It's
appropriate questions to ask.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it came down to, I think.
You don't want to be incentive. So you've lost X in a row. You got blown out. How safe are you?
Tell us about X.
Yeah, tell us. I'm not going to go off on that, but don't ask people to talk about something. It's your job to ask the question.
Yep.
Don't let them do the job for you. All right, so we'll get to the games here in a moment. We're week 8 already, is that correct?
That is correct.
Dang. Okay, week 8, two things. We have an announcement. We kind of teased it last week. We're going to tease it some more. If you listen to the show, great. We have a pair of tickets to Boise State versus Hawaii to give away.
Nice.
It's in Hawaii, and with the way the Warriors are improving, it could be a much better game. So we're figuring out exactly how to give those away, and we probably give you about 2 weeks' notice. So if you listen to the podcast, let us know and say, "Hey, that'd be cool for tickets." I know there's Hawaii people out there, but not a ton come to our website as much as I'd like.
Spread the word.
Spread the word, and they all hang out at the comment section of the Hawaii World or the Star Advertiser with Steven Tsai, which is great and awesome, but give us a try. We do talk about every team despite rumors or innuendos you may have seen about somebody trying to pick a fight with us, but the other mention, as I see me, Matt, I'm moving along, not going to discuss that further, okay?
Okay.
Just sometimes I do that, but Big 12 really quick. Yes, that's a collective eye roll we all did for the moment. Yes. I guess we have to talk about 5 seconds about it. Is that correct?
Let's never speak of the Big 12 again. Was that 5?
Also, yeah. That's enough? Is that good?
Anyway, you're saying.
We'll go to about another 10 seconds here. Really quick, I did a quick video. Basically, I like the idea of people saying, oh, bring in Houston, Cincinnati, UConn, make this giant conference. It's not going to happen, people.
Is that safe? That's the dream. I know that, you know, the guys over at the Daily Stampede, Nick and Colin, which is SB Nation's South Florida site, put together a hypothetical 2014 conference that's kind of a mashup of the best parts of the American, the Mountain West, the Conference USA, and Sunbelt. And if you want to scroll down our Twitter timeline a little bit, our counter argument is there. I wrote one. And so you guys can determine which one you like more.
There should be more of a scheduling agreement than doing a full-on gigantic conference, because that makes more sense. Like the Missouri Valley at Mountain West basketball, which should be put together better. But something like that where you have Boise versus South Florida, Cincinnati versus Hawaii, those UNLV versus South Florida or Temple or something. It's like that would help everybody out. But my argument all along was if two American teams go, then you go after the American conference like Tulsa or Houston or UTSA, but that's not going to happen. League's going to stay as it is, as I mentioned. Also, Big 12 is full of themselves. They were consortionist in this and not honest. Did you see the do's and don'ts memo that came out today?
So I remember something to do with don't mention being psychologically disadvantaged.
Yeah, that was mentioned a few months ago, and of course, yesterday, or whatever, Monday night, sorry, who knows what time you're listening to this, probably not Tuesday, but they're like, oh, we're in agreement, it's unanimous. Well, of course, less than 24 hours later, Brett McMurphy pulls out a or does some research or sources send him a little memo, not a little memo, 700 plus word memo about what to say, not to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so do say it was unanimous. Do say the conference is happy. Don't say, like you said, psychologically disadvantaged. No teams were worthy of joining the conference, or group of fives weren't worthy. Don't say, there's a bunch of do's and don'ts. I don't have it in front of me, but it's just kind of a joke where it basically contradicted everything they said yesterday about what they wanted to do. So
do win a big bowl.
I just think
at some point and justify our existence.
Oh, that's a good one.
You heard me, big ball fans.
Yeah. Do they listen to us? Maybe. I don't know.
But I'm calling them out. And if you know anybody that's a Big 12 fan, you tell them, come at me.
Matt_FS there on Twitter. So,
well, I mean,
bring it. You were lock and loaded yesterday. We wanted to do some stuff, but we backed away.
And condolences, of course, to, you know, Boise and Colorado State for being overlooked. But apparently,
Air Force, they were in the Final 11.
But apparently, you know, Matt Stevens of the Coloradoan already wrote a column about Colorado State possibly joining the Pac-12 someday.
He did already?
Yeah, so apparently they're moving on, and I applaud their initiative. It's going to be a process to get anywhere with this kind of thing, but I admire their drive. So,
two things about that. I know why Matt's doing it.
Yes.
It's this sound you hear me making.
Mm-hmm.
The clicking sound, yeah. To get the page views. Also, the bad part about it, the insufferable Colorado State fans who ultimately clog our Twitter timeline again and saying, we're going to make it. There was some guy Monday, I need to quit doing that. He went through an argument, or a lot of Ram fans get uppity, which not everybody, but it'd be great to have them move up there. But they're overconfident. That's a good way to put it, I think. Some of them are, about joining a better conference. This Boise State fan went in and favored it all these ones about saying it's a done deal. We're going to the Big 12. We'll be in a Power 5 conference. It's like a string of 12 tweets. Just favoriting them all. I'm like, great. Love it. It's kind of fun.
I just can't wait until they make me the commissioner of the NCAA and I just tell everybody to go to 16 teams and we could just be done with this forever.
Yeah, because there's 128. And because here's the thing. If you do 16, we'll make this quick here, because this is kind of fun just to screw around with. If they do four 16-team leagues, that's great. I've always felt you kind of got a built-in 8-team playoff anyways. You play your divisional side, you champion, you then your there's essentially quarterfinals. Each division champion, that's 8 teams. That, you know what I mean? Quarterfinal, essentially conference title game, same thing. Then you have the semis and title. It's nice and tidy, but it's... Matt, I can't believe Matt went ahead and wrote that about the Pac-12. Pac-12 is not expanding.
Well, I mean, I can understand why he did it as well. It's not only for the page clicks, but it is, you know, maybe someday if the program keeps going, especially with the new stadium that, you know, one way or another is opening next year. And if Mike Bobo keeps them on the right track and they...
But he's not on the right track. That's the thing. At the moment, he's not on the right track with...
Well, I mean, a lot of that comes down to quarterback issues, and we'll get to that in their game in a little bit. But, you know, generally speaking, I think you can easily make the argument that Colorado State is still on the upswing, and it may not happen next year, but within the next 5 years, possibly.
It depends. Like, I get the Pac-12. It actually makes more sense in Big 12, because what the Pac-12 has, if you... This is turning into what I didn't want it to, but that's fine. They have... USC, UCLA. They have all these pods. Cal, Stanford, Oregon, mm-hmm. Oregon State. And then you got this weirdness of Utah, Colorado. Oh, geez. Dang it. Video. But you have this weirdness, Colorado. You know how to fix that. Colorado State, BYU. Right? Just saying.
Yeah.
But not to get political and junk, but people like Cal... Those universities, Stanford, don't really like the likes of what BYU does at the university. So, just, yeah, whatever. We'll leave it at that.
One day we'll have answers, and we can just leave this behind forever.
I hope so. Hopefully that's the case. Next stop, really, 2025. Oh, also, real quick, I want to mention this. You saw what the Iowa State president said about what the Big 12 really is?
Yes.
Mountain West plus Texas and Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, I threw a little bit of salt at him, admittedly, because it's probably more like Conference USA without Texas and Oklahoma.
Oh, so even worse, even better. Got it.
Well, yeah, I mean, the joke that I made, which is, you know, has a grain of truth to it, is, you know, our teams win big games every once in a while.
Well, they made the playoff for Oklahoma last year.
And they got blown out.
Yeah, true.
And Baylor lost two New Year's Day games in a row.
Well, TCU whooped up on Ole Miss 2 years ago, so. But we'll take credit for that, right?
Yes, I will.
We'll see what happens, but it is true. Because they're looking at TV deals and stuff and market size. If you look at the market, you have University of Texas, which is in Austin, which is not a huge market. It's decent size, but everything else is tiny. Ames, Iowa, Manhattan, Kansas, Norman, Oklahoma, Stillwater, Lubbock, Texas. Baylor's kind of in Dallas, TCU, but whatever. Let's move on. I think we're done with that. I don't think people came to listen to that, did they?
Forget the Big 12. Let's move on to what really matters.
Football.
Football. Mountain West football. Yeah.
Thursday night. I am so excited for this game. We have, and this week's been fun on my radio show as well, BYU at Boise State.
Number 14, Boise State.
Undefeated, number 14, Boise State. Boise State is a touchdown favorite, it's funny. These two fan bases, a section, deserve themselves so much. Because some are overconfident, some are arrogant, that's everywhere, but some are more uppity than others, and sometimes these two fan bases can get after each other, either against each other or individually. This game's ESPN. It's 7:15 Pacific, 8:15 local time there. What was your first thought when you saw the line at a touchdown?
I thought it'd be closer.
You did. I thought it would be about 10 points. It started at 9.5, so it would have been closer at the beginning, but why do you think it would have been closer?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that, you know, Boise's strengths, I think, line up really well with a lot of BYU's strengths. And so, you know, there's going to be these really big clashes that are going to be really important. Like, the big one that stood out to me is the fact that you have, you know, BYU's running game with, you know, Taysom Hill and Jamal Williams, who combined already have over 1,300 yards. You know, they have 14 combined rushing touchdowns. They're averaging well over 5.5 yards per carry. So, I mean, the two of them as a pair have been kind of deadly running the football. But at the same time, you know, Boise State's defensive line has been one of the best in the group of five. You know, they've got guys like Sam McCaskill, David Moa, who are just racking up the tackles for loss and sacks especially. And they've really created opportunities for the linebackers to clean up. You know, Ben Weber's quietly having a very good season. You know, he doesn't have any tackles for loss, but he leads the team in tackles, as you might expect, you know, a linebacker to do. And, you know, the guys next to him, Tanner Vallejo, Darren Lee, they have 9.5 tackles between them as well. So the guys in that front seven have been making a lot of plays week in and week out. But, you know, the same way that they got tested a couple weeks ago against New Mexico, where they ended up giving up a lot of, you know, a lot of ground with the running attack. But they were able to make plays elsewhere and really, you know, keep the Lobos at arm's length. It's going to look a little bit different against BYU because it's a little more of a pro-style offense, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it is. With Ty Detmer there, they get the tight end involved. They run the ball. They're not doing the diamond or shotgun as much. It's kind of like what the Patriots do a little bit, but so if you're kind of familiar with that type of play, it's kind of like that. They still may go three wide, but it's not a fast offense or a quick tempo. It is more of a pro-style with more shotgun mixed in.
Yeah, and I mean, conversely, you know, Boise's running attack, of course, everybody knows Jeremy McNichols is having an awesome year. But very quietly so are BYU's linebackers.
Oh, yeah.
Like I've mentioned Bill Connolly's havoc rate in the past, where it's, you know, the percentage of plays where a unit, it's a tackle for loss, a pass defense, or, you know, something along those lines. You can look it up on Football Stuff.
As you should. Everybody should.
Regardless, BYU's linebackers, as far as havoc rate, are fourth in the country right now. And so I think McNichols, more often than not, is going to have a hard time getting to the second level against this defense in a way that he might have in most other weeks. And, you know, if they can put the clamps on him and he's only averaging, you know, what, 3.5, 4 yards carry, then the question becomes, how does Brett Rypien respond? And if he's the same quarterback that he's been in the last couple weeks, I think Boise's got more than enough offensive firepower to keep, you know, the Cougars at bay. But if he takes a step backwards towards what he was, you know, the kind of performances he had against Washington State and, you know, the
even parts of Oregon State ball game too, the second half.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if he's a little more erratic like he was in those games, then I think it gets a little more interesting. But that's what I would watch for.
A couple things. Well, the linebacking core is very good. They're getting one player who's, they've made a switch, a couple guys. Like the weird thing is they've two other guys that used to play offense played running back. Like they have Harvey Longy and Francis Bernard switch from running back to linebacker. And it's Harvey Longy's done it longer than Bernard, but they also have this guy, Butch Powell, who came back. I think it was on his mission last year. He missed the past couple of games. He played a little bit more last week versus Mississippi State. He is freaking amazing. So their linebacking core, and you said the Havoc rate at four, they've played some not amazing offenses. Like they played West Virginia close. They played Toledo, obviously very good offensively. Utah, who not great during that time, but Michigan State, UCLA, Arizona, they've played a lot of good teams. So their fourth is not a fluke of being, oh, they're playing weird, bad teams, not good teams. But that is an area where they could be ran on a little bit because BYU has given up 11 rushing touchdowns, which is, however, they're rushing per game. Like they're only giving up about 131, they're top 30. And they're only giving up 3.5 yards per play. So that's a big issue there. And if Butch Powell is more healthy this week, he's the reason they kind of struggled defensively the past couple of games in certain areas. And so that will be something I want to look at. He had an MCL, so I think he's supposed to be fully healthy, if I'm correct, from this week. But it's just another big piece. And also, one thing to note, last year, McNichols, while he scored 3 touchdowns last year, 2 rushing, 1 passing or receiving, I believe he had only about 45 yards on the ground. So they held him in check last year as well. And so and some of those same players are back this year.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really interesting because they've been almost as efficient as far as yards per play on the road. They've actually been a little better on the road yards per play than they have been at home. So I don't think this offense is going to be intimidated going to Boise either. And they've, you know, been fairly steady across the board. Like yards per play, they're right around average nationally, but there's no real splits that stand out as far as, you know, Taysom Hill's, you know, passing production dropping at any point. It's like just, if you look at,
it's also never been great either this year. So he's not like I see enough of him. I watch enough of him. He's not a great thrower. He's good enough to get the ball done. They'll move the ball when he moves the pocket and maybe runs or makes a running throw play.
Yeah. And so, but there's like no real glaring weaknesses in this BYU offense is kind of what I'm saying.
I can point some out if you'd like.
Well, go for it because you've been watching.
Yeah, I've watched him more closely. Taysom Hill's passing percentage is not great. Their wide receiving core, they have this guy Jonah Turnerman, who's very fast. And if you saw the Toledo game, he scored like the first pass 75 yards. They're not deep a receiver, and so that's an issue where they have tight end that's kind of emerging a little bit, but they basically all their guys are brand new. So they have this guy Talmadge Sumway who emerging a little bit, but they rotate tight ends because tight end wants the tight ends. The receiving core they'll get plays. Like I said, I'm not saying there's like a terrible weakness, but if there's a place where they could struggle, like basically, here's the thing. If you can make Taysom Hill stop Jamal Williams or slow him down and make Boise or BYU throw to beat you, Boise State should win easily because I don't think Taysom Hill can beat anybody throwing if he has to throw 30 times, 35 times in the game. That's not what they want to do, but the receivers overall are so young and they're not amazing. Like this guy Nick Kurtz, who thought would have been amazing 2 years ago, JUCO transfer, fractures his foot, breaks his foot twice, and nobody's really stepping up in the receiving game. And so they don't, besides Jordan Truman, he's also a junior college transfer. So he's only played 1 year of JUCO, not even a 2 year guy. And so that's where their big weakness is. Offensive line's improved much over what it has been the past couple weeks, but their weakness is their passing game. If Boise can make BYU throw, then they're going to win. I have all the confidence in the world they can beat them if Boise forces the Cougars to throw much more than they want to.
Yeah, so I was looking it up as you were talking, and to reinforce that point, because I didn't realize this, BYU's only got 13 plays this year of more than 20
Yeah, that was a
yards.
big deal for the past couple of weeks. When's the first pass play over 20 yards?
And they only have three of them of more than 30 yards, which is tied for next to last in the country. So if that defensive line plays up and can beat that BYU offensive line, it could be a really long evening for Taysom Hill.
It could be. And another thing as well with kind of what's going on overall for this team. Oh, crap. I was going to say something. I spaced my mind. Oh, no, here's what I was going to bring up. Sorry. I had the stat sitting here. Sorry. I'll just change the topic because I forgot where I was going there. But, you know, we mentioned Boise State had played so poorly against New Mexico in that Russian attack.
Well, it wasn't that they played poorly, but they gave a
Well,
lot of
that's what I meant. Like
ground.
they're giving up the large. They gave up 6.26 yards per play, and versus CSU didn't do that great as either. But they're still giving up less than 4 yards or fewer than 4 yards per carry, 3.94, despite their past two games, which could be a trend in the wrong direction, where that's 6 yards and 5.1 yards, and so it's just kind of interesting that it only went up to almost four.
I think they'll probably be fine, all things
Yeah,
considered.
I just wanted to note that where they gave up so much and then so little overall, this hasn't changed much. I guess playing Lafayette or Washington State skews those numbers a bit.
So, who you got in this game?
I want to say Boise State. Like, most of these games have been close for the most part. Last year ended up on a Hail Mary, then an interception by Kai Nakua for BYU to seal it. That pick six. They've had close games. Here's the thing, BYU's never won at Boise State. So that's the thing to actually look at. They blew them out last time they played at Boise State. Time before that was that ugly 7-6 game, I want to say, where BYU went for two instead of kicking it to, and they lost instead of forcing overtime. I think Boise has the more complete team overall, because like you said as well, Rippon can throw the ball well. They can run the ball well. There are issues where neither of those may not work together. But if they play their game, both of those are something they can achieve at. BYU
Yeah, I
can
like
throw a
both.
little bit, but they want to rely more on the running game and their defense to make huge plays. I think the BYU defense is better than Boise State's defense, but not by a huge margin.
Yeah, I like Boise in this matchup too, because I think even if they do slow McNichols, they have enough weapons on the outside that Rippon should be able to make him pay
And
for it. And
hopefully
so
Cedric Wilson is fully healthy as well.
it's a 7-point spread, but I like Boise to maybe cover that seven. Let's call it like 31, 32, 24 or something like
Do you have the
that.
over-under on this game in front of you?
Not off the top of my
Let me
head,
see real
no.
quick. I think Boise could win by about 10 points. The Big 12 thing, people say, oh, is there an impact on that? Probably not. They don't care. None of these guys are going to be there if that were to be the case. The over-under, I'm going to, let's see here, it's 57.5.
Oh.
And look at,
So I would take the over.
I would, oh, definitely take the over on the points in there. I think if, well, yeah, I would be more comfortable, even though they've had two games that have been low scoring, but. Here's interesting, really quick before we move on. TeamRankings.com has the average score 32-24 for Boise State. However, Number Fire only 27-19. It's kind of a big difference there for computer simulations, but I just find it funny that because of me being more close to BYU, Boise or BYU fans are like, oh, we got this, we're gonna win. I'll take the 9 points. Every game's been close. I expect it to be close like every game they've played. Like
Yeah,
they've had
pretty
multiple overtime games. They've had the closest game to a blowout was West Virginia. They made a comeback to almost win that game. So I think it'll be one score game. I guess I'll say Boise will cover, but I'm not confident they will because 7 points is crappy to pick over or under. So
Yeah.
actually I'll take BYU to cover, but it'll be like a 3-6 point win. I would prefer a blowout because that'd be fun, but I don't see that happening, unfortunately.
All right
All
then.
right, let's move on. That was oh, also did we mention that was Thursday, right? Yeah,
Yes.
if you didn't know, that's a Thursday night game. Friday, yeah, we got Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So your weekend's pretty open for Saturday. We have, of course, my computer's not refreshing. Is it San Jose State playing Friday night?
At San Diego State, 7:30 Pacific, 8:30 Mountain on ESPN2.
Is this the game we give Donnell Pumphrey the Doak Walker Award for rushing for 350 yards?
That might be asking a lot, but I think, it's a fair question to
Hyperbole, come
ask,
on.
is like, how many, how many yards does Donnell Pumphrey run for this week? You know, because, you know, it was a little strange seeing him salt the game away last week in the fourth quarter. You know, it made me wonder why they didn't give Rashard Penny a few more carries down the stretch. And, you know, granted, of course, he put up big numbers anyway. Like, they didn't, you know, Fresno State wasn't able to slow him down at all. But I'm curious to see if they can get up by like two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, whether they ease up with Pumphrey or really keep the pedal to the metal with him on the field.
We'll see. This is a 23.5 point line in favor of the Aztecs. It's a really quick, it's an ESPN2 game at 7:30 Pacific there. That's a lot of points, but also San Jose State's not very good.
Yeah, I mean, they played pretty well defensively last week against Nevada, but
that's Nevada.
That's
or is it Nevada?
And I mean, the other thing to ask, which I think is a fair question, is like, first of all, is Kenny Potter going to find any room to throw the football? Because I like San Jose State's receivers. I think that there's some big playability there. But, you know, San Diego State's secondary has been playing lights out all season long. And, you know, going back to the havoc rate percentage, you know, Their percentage is at 9.3 among their DBs, which is sixth in the country. And that's not just a credit to, you know, DeMonte Casey, who's obviously having another great year, but Derek Babiesh, who very quietly has had, you know, three interceptions of his own and even more pass breakups than Casey. And even the other guys in that secondary, like Malik Smith, has four pass breakups. You know, Parker Baldwin has one, a forced fumble. They've been making plays everywhere. So I think Potter is going to have a hard time throwing the football. But then you think about, are they going to be able to keep him upright this week?
That too. Because that is the one weakness because Aztecs have. The throwing defense, her pass defense, is the one area where you can make some movement against them.
I really think that the only way San Jose State gets in this game is if they can basically create opportunities in their secondary.
So not sabotaging the bus ride?
No, unfortunately, because I think they could just walk into the stadium and own the place. But, and the reason I say that is because if you look at Christian Chapman's last month, he's been fine on the whole. Like he's under 60% completion percentage in three of his last four games, which is not great. And, you know, he's right around, what, six-something yards per play yards per attempt in the last month. He's only thrown one interception, which is good because they need him to take care of the football. So he hasn't given the ball away or anything like that. But he hasn't made quite as many plays in the secondary as you might expect for someone who, you know, relies on play action, who can, you know, push the ball down the field a little more than you might expect.
You would think they would be able to do that.
Like, if you watched last week's game against Fresno State, like, you know, the Bulldogs defense didn't play particularly well, but they didn't make a lot of plays in the passing game. And I think that, you know, the Spartans have, I still think, and I've said this more than once, that they have a pretty good secondary.
They did it last week.
So, like, if someone like Andre Chachere can intercept a pass, or if Maurice McKnight can intercept a pass, and they can, you know, tilt the field position game in their favor, because, you know, Michael Carrizosa still plays for the Spartans. He's still having another good year, probably on the short list for another Ray Guy finalist nod. So, I mean, if they can win the field position battle and really keep, you know, the passing game at bay, you know, Donnell Pumphrey's probably going to get his yards one way or another. But if they can keep him out of the end zone and create turnovers, I think that's really the only way it gets a lot more interesting than probably you or I expect it to be.
It could be, because look at, like, go back to last week again. It was only a 17-3 win, despite how dominant San Diego looked over Fresno. So,
despite how Pumphrey
looked over Fresno. You know what I mean, but He with 220 yards, you expect maybe three or four touchdowns offensively, not him, but overall. And so as soon as they see, like you said, they can create turnovers, they have a good pass defense, they will need to somehow force Chapman into those errors. But that's the only way, like, the way San Diego State has been playing, I will take the Spartans to cover, because it's 23.5. That's a lot of points for a team that, not to crap on Fresno, but they only scored 17 against Fresno.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's fair.
Well, I'm just saying, like, for like, crap on. Well, I'm saying, look at Tulsa, those points. I mean, for a team that's defense isn't that all that great, they held them to 17 points. And the so that's why I'm thinking this might be like a 17 point victory for San Diego State. Because Aztecs last year, they were blowing out the West Division, but that's not the case this year. A lot of close games.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say they're closer. They're just kind of. I mean, I'm not going to say it's like a sleepwalking effort, but they just win comfortably. It's not necessarily a blowout. Like, it's the difference between like a 4-touchdown win and a 2-touchdown win. They basically just choked the life out of the Bulldogs last week, and it wouldn't surprise me if they did the same thing to San Jose this week.
That's what I'm thinking. It might be a 17-point victory because Aztecs were, like, I was watching, like, it's 14-13, or even the UNLV game where it was reasonably close, even though you could tell the Aztecs were the much better team. They just weren't getting the points, and that's where I think this might be a little more of an easier victory than last week, but it's still like this might be like a 24-7 game or something.
Yeah, I can see that, and I'm in the same boat with you. I think they'll win pretty comfortably. I'm not expecting them to cover a 23-point spread.
No. All right. Let's move on to Saturday. We actually have one non-conference game we'll get to, but first game is Hawaii's playing it in sunlight during the day. And on the mainland, they are, I'm terrible today, at Air Force, noon kickoff. I don't have the actual release in front of me. Is this on Root Sports, I believe, I want to say?
I will tell you in a moment.
I should have that up here. Oh, actually, I do have it up here. No.
It's on Oceanic, which nobody can watch.
This makes me upset.
Or, maybe somebody intrepid out there.
Periscope?
Periscope, yeah. So just keep your eyes peeled. Last week, somebody on Reddit College Football had a stream. So, keep your eyes peeled out there, folks.
I wonder if I should reach out to our one-time photographer, Ronnie, if he's going to be at the game. Say, hey, can you hook us up with something? We'll see, but man, what? I don't know what are they doing to all these pay-per-view games on the mainland? It doesn't make any sense. Are they trying to make up for that TV deal? Because for those who don't know, Hawaii has their own television deal. They don't get bonus money. They're not part of the per year TV revenue stream. So I'm wondering if that's the case.
That's an excellent question.
I still look it up, but I'm wondering if this game is picked up locally like it was for last week for the NBC affiliate. Picked it up in Las Vegas, but as for the game itself, it's a 16 and a half point favorite for the Falcons, who played well in the Cotton Bowl last week, but not well enough. Can Hawaii somehow make this close again? Because this is much tougher than playing the Nevada or UNLV the past couple weeks where they've been winning, or San Jose State.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the question is, is Drew Brown going to be able to rebound? Because he was a little bit shaky last week against the Rebels after looking really good against Nevada and San Jose State. He's going to have a tough time against the secondary because I still think that they're playing at a high level on the year. Maybe they're not getting quite as many tackles for loss as he might have expected this, especially someone like Weston Steelhammer who knows how to play the run. It's going to be interesting to see. I'm not totally certain. I think what Hawaii's going to have to do to win is they're going to have to lean on their running game, which, for the step back that Drew Brown took last week against UNLV, the running game, behind Paul Harris and Stephen Lakalaka and St. Juiced really came back with a vengeance. And they've got four guys now who've run over 200 yards on the season. So I wouldn't be surprised if they basically did kind of what New Mexico did last week and just went right after this front seven, which, is undersized because of the recruiting limits that they have over there at the academy.
And they're going to play defense the past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Just saying. They have not looked good defensively at all after us praising them. I want to believe in Hawaii, but I also want to believe Air Force hasn't stumbled as much as they have. And
well, I mean, they've faced a couple of like teams who you know they're going to run the football, and you know Brian Hill got his 2 weeks ago, and they only allowed 4 yards of carry on the whole against the Cowboys 2 weeks ago, which isn't bad. And you know New Mexico's been running the football all over everybody.
Yeah,
this
but they
year.
Stopped Navy. That's the thing. They basically shut down Navy completely.
Yeah. So you know, are they a little bit beat up? I'm not totally sure, but I think that. You know, if Hawaii wants to be able to control the, I think if they want it, what they want to do is keep the Air Force offense off the field, because I think if they give, you know, Romine and their stable of running backs enough time, you know, they're going to take the air out of the football. And I would assume try to do the same thing that Hawaii wants to do to Air Force, which is run it right down their throats, because we saw last week that UNLV had a lot of success with that, with Lexington Thomas and Charles Williams.
Yeah, I think that's what their strength is, and that's what they're going to do. Even with Romine having that career high last week, throwing the ball to Robinette for, I think he had 280 overall, half of that to Jalen. Air Force should win and win comfortably. I want to see them play a better defensive game. I don't want this to be like a shootout. I think they need to not that my opinion matters, but to give me more confidence in that Falcons defense, they need to not allow Hawaii to get more than 14 points. And I think that's realistic because, like I said, Hawaii's played not the best teams of late, even though they're winning. You got to give them all the credit for getting the wins, because you play who you play, and they've been so bad, so getting wins is a big deal for them. But this is probably the best team they've played since Michigan, right? Or Arizona, whoever the last Arizona, I would say, the last non-conference game when they played the Cal, Michigan, Arizona trip. So I would say toughest team since Arizona. And remember, this is also the game that got last year that got Norm Chow fired. Air Force won 58-7.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that this is the same Hawaii team, though. I think one thing you could keep an eye on is, you know, Hawaii's been pretty good about, you know, finding big plays through the passing game too. And I think if they can find one or two against the Falcons, they're, you know, on defense, the Falcons have given up 13 plays of more than 30 yards in the six games that they played. So they've been a little bit susceptible to that. So I think if Marcus Kemp or someone like John Ursua can find an opportunity and convert down the field, you know, that's not out of the realm of possibility for this offense in a way that it was in this matchup last year.
All right, so who's winning this game? Is it Falcons easily?
I think it'll probably be a little more competitive. Like, did you say the line was?
16.5.
I would probably take Hawaii and the points, because I think that the Hawaii running game especially is good enough to really challenge this front seven. And I think that's probably what they're going to want to do. So I'm imagining a little bit of a lower scoring game, you know, something like maybe 28-21 Air Force. Like, I think that the Falcons will win in the end, but it wouldn't surprise me if Hawaii made them really work for it until the end.
I'm looking at the statistics or the simulations from Team Ranking and NumberFire. Over under, first of all, 61, 61.5. So you're 28-21 is right on with that. NumberFire says 41-17. I'm rounding up a tiny bit. Team rankings 38-21 in favor of Air Force. I think Air Force is going to cover one by 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, Bill C has them, by the way, at about 38-27.
I don't see I could see it because part of Hawaii's offense is playing better, but Air Force's defense has been so bad. I think Air Force will pick it up and have a better defensive effort, but still maybe allow 17 points or so. I think they might win like 37-17 or something like that.
It should be a pretty fun game, I think, for those of us who can watch.
It's ridiculous. All right, let's take a quick timeout real quick after this game, so have some fun with whatever gets played in the next moments. Here, and we'll be back to talk about the rest of the Saturday games. All right, next game on the schedule, we'll go, still going in order, Colorado State at UNLV. Rams are 3-4. UNLV is also 3-4. This is a big game for a bowl eligibility for both teams. It's a 3:30 kickoff, really quick, Mountain Time, 2:30 out there in Las Vegas. Rebels are a 3-point favorite. Does that surprise you? They're a field goal favorite in this matchup?
That does surprise me. Like, when I looked at the line to begin with, I believe it was a pick. But the fact that the line has moved in UNLV's favor surprises me.
Also, real quick, this is a Root Sports broadcast, meaning if you're outside of that market or don't get Root Sports, Rocky Mountain, you can stream it. So, Matt, you're free to stream this game. Me, I have to watch on good old television.
Bummer.
Whatever. Deal with it. I'll deal with it, I guess. So also, one quick note with UNLV. Johnny Stanton's back on the depth chart at quarterback, listed as a third QB. I'm not sure if he's healthy enough to come in. But they're starting Dalton Snead. And I'm wondering, do you think it's the right move just to keep Snead the rest of the way?
I don't see why not. I mean, especially with the fact that there's so many other young players on this offense. Like, we've talked, at length about the skill position players. Thomas Stevenson, Devontae Boyd is still a junior, so he'll probably have one more year. All the guys further down the depth chart. But, even the guys along the offensive line have a little bit of youth too, especially on the right side of that line. Justin Polu is a redshirt freshman at right guard. Nathan Jacobson is a sophomore.
And so all the wide receivers.
I think it makes sense to
not name Boyd. Yeah.
And I think, it just makes sense to me. You have a guy who's shown some playmaking ability, not only with his arm, but with his legs. And, there might be some growing pains, like you saw a couple weeks ago against San Diego State. But to me, I think it's the right move because that you're building towards the future and you're getting this guy in the important experience to build off of going into next season.
So what do you think with that? So what this Rams team does, they don't do anything extremely well because they've been inconsistent. Let's kind of switch sides here as I'm just jumping over. But the running game's been okay with Izzy Matthews and Dawkins. They're back with Nick Stevens at QB, who did okay versus Boise. Game much closer than, or not as close as you thought if you just looked at the box score. They need the pair of onside kicks to make it back. I'm more confident in the Rams because the defense seems to have turned it around. Yeah, they gave up 28 to Boise State, but that first half looked really good. And so if their defense has improved and Marty English running that defense improved and got them, as I say, improved for the fifth time in a row, has gotten better and has been playing well, I'm wondering if they can stop this running attack that the Rebels will no doubt throw at them.
Yeah, I mean, and on the flip side, one thing I didn't realize until right now is, one of the reasons I was so optimistic about the Rams coming into this season is because I thought that they had a really strong running game. But if you look at the splits of how things have broken down throughout the season thus far, it's not all that encouraging. Like, their yards per carry average drops from the first to the second to the third to the fourth quarter. Early in the games, in those first 15 minutes, they're averaging 5.4 yards per carry, which is great, But by the fourth quarter, they're only averaging 3.8, 3.9, something like that. And there's a similar kind of split on, from first to second to third down. Like, when they've needed, short yardage situations, they haven't always been that successful. Like, they've only averaged 1.6 yards per carry on third down so far. Well, and I mean, some of that is skewed a little bit by the fact that, when they've tried to run in like third and middle, third and long situations, they actually go backwards.
The average is a negative yard.
But yeah, but they're only averaging 3 yards a carry on third and short, which is kind of cutting it close if you ask me. And I think that, since it still remains to be seen as to how good Nick Stevens can be, I think this pass defense is, game enough to make a few plays. So I want to see Dalen Dawkins and Izzy Matthews step up, kind of like I've wanted them to see it.
Yeah,
step
all year, up long. They've been like the touchdowns of Dawkins with 4, Matthews with 1. They've just been, like you said, they haven't been consistent enough for me because we thought that'd be a strength for this team. And overall, it's just kind of.
Yes.
I don't know. Neither of these teams, like, can we pick this game to be a tie? Is that acceptable?
Unfortunately, they make them play
pesky overtime. So, if you're to pick one position group you're most confident of, like, this this position group is much better than this. Like, what area are you the most confident or more well, those are two separate questions. For you, what position group is the strongest in this game? For a team-wise.
For UNLV, it's definitely the running backs. And for Colorado State, like I've said all season long, I think their linebackers are very good. But I do like this matchup of UNLV's offensive line versus CSU's defensive line in this particular instance, because the Rams haven't been terribly proficient in getting into the backfield all the time. Actually, I take that back. They lead the league in tackles for loss. But, you know, on the whole, you know, they're going up against an offensive line that's actually been pretty good at, you know, creating space for Lexington Thomas, or at least creating opportunities where they're not losing that much yardage. They're actually third in the conference right now in tackles for loss allowed behind Air Force and Boise. So to me, I think if the linebackers play well, like if the defensive line for CSU can hold up just enough to make, you know, Kevin Davis and company make plays, then I think it's going to be a pretty hotly contested contest. But like I said, I like UNLV's running backs a lot, and I think that
So you're taking Rebels to be able to win this one at home. I am going to as well, because UNLV is better at home. Rams are, I know both, neither team's really consistent, but I like what I'm seeing from that Colorado State defense past couple weeks. But McNichols also had a big game running the ball. And so I think with technically three players with Snead able to run a bit for the Rebels, I'm going to go Rebels to win by touchdown.
By the way, did you realize that UNLV has the second best yards per play?
That 91 yard play will skew so far this year.
Yeah, that's true. But on the whole, they're still averaging 7.6 yards per play.
That includes incomplete passes and sacks. So yeah, that's very good. That's a good nugget pull there. Excellent. All right, next game. Louisiana Monroe at New Mexico, also a Root Sports game. I don't know what to make of New Mexico. They are 17.5 point favorite versus Monroe, who's 2-4. It's a later kick, 7 p.m. local time. We do know, and as you pointed out in our Twitter feed, Lamar Jordan's still getting the start. Is that correct? And Austin Apodaca still has that bruised collarbone a little bit. And they said they might see LaJuan Watson.
Yeah.
Juwan Lawson is technically the backup. Is that what we're hearing? Okay, sorry. I can picture the name. Juwan, but I know it's Lawson, so I'm like, whatever. Moving on, but this team's kind of like UNLV. It's like, what team's really going to show up? Because I honestly think, even though, not that you disagree, but you countered with a great point about Gibson being in the lineup versus Boise, they still ran the ball very well. But I still contend that even though they still got the yardage, they did versus Boise State. I know it's Boise State, so it's hard to tell when they ran so well but didn't play all that great and lost pretty big. And if you look at Rutgers game as well, they still had plenty of big plays. I still think it's Gibson that leads this team. Yeah, Richard McCorley could step up for a big running play. Lamar Jordan could go off for a big running play. But I still think Gibson leading that way in the ground game is why they win games, even though the yardage could be the same versus other teams.
Okay, so here's why I think New Mexico should win this game pretty comfortably. Louisiana Monroe is just not a very good team at this moment in time. Okay, so if you look at their yards, so I'm just going to pull out the same stat that I did just now for UNLV. You know, yards per play. On defense, the Warhawks give up just over 6 yards per play. And on total, you know, if you flip it on total offense, you know, they're dead last in the Sun Belt with, you know, 4.9 yards per play on offense. And you know, when you look at the number of plays that they've run, you know, they're just about middle of the pack. So it's not as though they're
good.
You know, it's not as though they're going through a lot of three and outs or anything like that. It just, you know, if you look at a lot of their skill position players, they're in some respects kind of like UNLV, where they're kind of figuring it out. You know, they have a sophomore quarterback of their own in Garrett Smith, who's on the whole been okay. Like, he's completing, you know, 57% of his passes, has a 9-7 touchdown to interception ratio. So he's been okay. And I mean, he's also the team's second leading rusher, which, you know, rings a bell for probably some teams in the Mountain West. But I mean, the other, you know, the skill position players that stand out, you know, Ben Luckett is a sophomore, you know, Marcus Green, their leading receiver, is a sophomore. And, you know, they've haven't really found all that many big plays on offense. Yeah. So while, you know, New Mexico's defense has been a little bit shaky, you know, this isn't the kind of game they should be.
Here's my reasoning. They lost to Idaho, so New Mexico should win. But Love was lost to the Aggies of New Mexico State, so there's that as well. Yeah, looking at what Louisiana Monroe does, yeah, Garrett Smith or QBs, he runs a little bit, has 300 on the year, a couple TDs, but like I said, Ben Luckett, okay running back. They don't complete this. This will be a game where I guarantee it, and I'll say it now, and I'll probably forget it, but say it again. This will be a game when we talk about the recap, I will say good for the New Mexico defense for playing a good game. And yes, it'll be part of them playing well, but a lot of it will be that this Louisiana Monroe offense just is not very good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the offense is good enough to keep up with the Lobos offense. I mean, especially, you know, going back to the Havoc rate stat one more time, you know, the Warhawks defensive line, they rank 110th right now in the Havoc rate. And so while the linebackers have been able to clean up a little, like, you know, they have another sophomore, David Griffith, who has 9 tackles for loss so far this year. But, you know, they're going to have their work cut out for them getting pushed around up front. And this is, you know, for better or worse, you know, New Mexico is still one of the best running teams in the country. They're still averaging 6.5 yards per carry, win or week to week. And I mean, I think we've seen how things shake out. You know, when they get close to the goal line, they give it to Richard McCorley. If they need a big play, they give it to Tarion Gibson or Tyrone Owens. And, you know, if they have a running quarterback behind them, you know, they're not afraid to let Jordan run with it. And I think that all things considered, this is a game that they should win pretty handily. Like, I would be kind of disappointed if they didn't put up 40 points against Louisiana Monroe.
They should, because I don't see Monroe keeping up in this game. I think they could score points because the defense for New Mexico is not good, but 17 is a lot of points. 17 and a half. That means they're winning. You think they'll win like 40-20?
I like them to cover.
What's the last time New Mexico's beat somebody by 3 touchdowns? We don't need to look it up, but I think it's been a while they've actually blown out a team like that. And not South Dakota or like FCS teams do not count. So they yell at us, so they beat this team by 35 points. An FBS victory. So maybe we'll look into that later. I'll just do a quick check. 2016, they just had the one victory, like I said, South Dakota. I'm going to look at last year really quick as we keep going here.
I'm already way ahead of you. They beat New Mexico State
2013-17
back in 2013.
They beat Air Force by 8 last year, or by 12. That doesn't count. Those will blow out. Okay.
No, perfect. I mean, you're talking 3 touchdowns. That's
so
the
that's
last time
long ago,
they did it.
But I think they'll win. I'll go with 40-20. I'll say they win by that amount of points, 40-20. All right, next game. We have two more real quick. Fresno State at Utah State. CBS Sports Network, one of the later kicks, 7:30 out west, 8:30 local. Aggies are a 16-point favorite, apparently? Question mark?
That doesn't... Yeah, I mean, because not only are you running up against a team that's just not very good, now you're running up a team that's dealing with the injuries really for the first time this year. Like, if you weren't paying attention last week, they lost one of their outside linebackers for the year, although that was due to, like, I believe academic ineligibility. But Brandon Hughes is no longer there, so that's one starter gone. You know, Aaron Pick had a leg injury last week against San Diego State. He's not going to play.
It's only 16 and a half.
Delvon Hardaway in the starting lineup. Yeah, so... But I mean, interestingly, like if you look at the depth chart, they're starting to make changes, like, because I think they're trying to find a combination that works. Like, you know, Mike Bell's been elevated to the starter at strong safety, and, you know, Logan Hughes is replacing Jacob Vasquez at left guard. So they're trying something to really save this season, because if they go to 0-4 and get blown out by, you know, a 16, 20 point margin, you know, it's going to look ugly when they come back home next week. And, you know, the question to me is, you know, are they going to be able to contain the running game? Because, you know, they, of course, we know they don't have Devontae Mays at this point. But is this another one of those games where someone like Tony Lindsay or Justin Hervey gets loose in the same way that they have in
possibly a few weeks past? As you're doing that, I was looking at a quote from Matt Wells on Devontae Mays. Here's a quote from Steve Loom, who covers them for the Select Tribune. On what it says, this is on the injured Mays. Matt Wells saying everybody's healthier after a bye. We'll see if we get him back in the lineup this week. I'm not sure what 2016 is like with Devontae Mace because we haven't had him. We've had him for one game. Coach, give us something. So that sounds like he's not going to play.
That's fair. And so the question then becomes, you know,
is Lindsay consistent enough to do that? Because he's been up and down as well this year.
Exactly. And, you know, even if he's down, you know, Kent Myers has shown that he can make a play or two. You know, I think the question then becomes, are they going to be able to keep him upright? Like, is the Fresno State pass rush going to be good enough to basically put pressure on him? Because Myers has been sacked 19 times, but, you know, Fresno State on the whole has, I'm trying to look it up real quick, they only have 9 sacks on the year, which is next to last in the conference. And so, you know, if they can't get to him, so yeah, with like apart, with or without a
Rashad Lewis and Raquan, what's his name? Shoot, that name I couldn't get last week. But they have some receivers that are good, that are pretty good. But with being at home for Utah, State, even if Mays doesn't play, this is a game they, if they're going to make a bowl game, they have to win this game essentially, because they've lost 3 in a row. They've won a conference game, and their schedule only gets easier from here outside of San Diego State. I guess, maybe not easier. Their schedule's pretty tough, but they played the 3 toughest mountain teams already. And I think that when, I don't think they'll get to win by 16, but I think they should win and make it look somewhat easy, but not like a blowout victory.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is kind of like last week, where I probably should have thought better of it, because I don't know that San Diego State would be close enough to cover that kind of spread. So I'll take Fresno State in the points, but I expect Utah State to win. Yeah, with the
injuries, wide receiver, and Utah State, I think, is a bit better overall. It's a good play there. All right, final game. We need to wrap this up. We're going long tonight. Wyoming at Nevada, ESPN2, 7:30 Pacific time there.
Okay.
This will be Wyoming's only is a 4.5 road favorite against the Wolfpack, the Fighting Wolfpack. You guys, too much? Not enough?
Interesting. I don't think it's enough. Like, I don't know how many people out there look at some of these advanced numbers like I do, but do you realize that, like, a lot of the advanced numbers,
I've seen them play,
really hate Nevada for some reason? Yeah, I mean, if you look at the, you know, Football Study Hall, they have this metric S&P Plus, which is more or less their most comprehensive number that they have. And the only team worse than the Wolfpack in conference is San Jose State. So, I mean, despite the fact that they have James Butler, who should get a challenge from this defensive line with or without Carl Granderson, you know, again, you know, last week they weren't able to find big plays, and they've really only been successful when they've been able to find big plays in the passing
game. Tyler.
So James Stewart, or not James Stewart, James Butler, so he can run as much as he wants, and he's having a very good season. He's already closing in on 1,000 yards, and it wouldn't surprise me if he gets there in this particular game. But if Tyler Stewart just can't push the ball down the field,
you think at this point in his career, with the amount of receivers they have, the talent that's there, they should, like, I was kind of high in Nevada to do pretty well, pick them to be second in the West, but receiving hasn't been well. Tyler Stewart doesn't throw particularly well. And if they're going to get to win, they have to throw above average, because Stewart's, while he's completing He's just not good enough. He's only completing, not only, but 62% is not bad, but it's only at 159 yards per game. He not 9 touchdown, 3 picks. He's not terrible. He's just not. Are our expectations too high for him? Because he's doing just okay.
I mean, I think if you compare his numbers from this year to last year, he's basically the exact same guy. Like, he's improved his completion percentage a little bit, but his yards per attempt so far this year is exactly the same, 6.6 yards per attempt. And, you know, if you compare that to other quarterbacks in the conference, it's just not getting it done. Like, he's a little bit better than Kent Myers, a little bit better than Chase and Virgil, but, like, compared to the better quarterbacks in the conference, like, for example, Ripon is averaging 9 yards per attempt. Josh Allen, who's, you know, quarterbacking Wyoming this weekend, is at 8. Kenny Potter's at 8.1. You know, Christian Chapman, even, like, he hasn't been terribly efficient, but even he's at 8.12. So, yeah, I think he is kind of what he is.
Interesting stat as a freshman
at this point.
Oh, yes, only 37 attempts, 6.8 yards per attempt. So pretty much even across the board.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think he's...
That's not saying
he's
much.
He's basically a better version of the Kaiko Woolsey.
Yeah, and he can run a little bit as well.
I mean,
well.
He can at least get to 60%.
I don't know. Maybe we are thinking too... Well, maybe not. He only has 91 rushing yards. I thought he had more than that. He should have... He should have more than that, I would say.
See, what I'm wondering is... You know, we know that James Butler is very good, and they're probably going to lean on him a lot. I'm curious, though, to see how often they lean on, you know, his backup, Jackson Kincaid, to get a lot of carries. Because if you look at his production this year, he doesn't really stand out. Like, he's only got 41 carries. He's just under 200 yards on the season. But I think against this Wyoming defensive line, it makes sense to try and put the game in the hands of your running backs because, you know, nobody on that Wyoming front is more than 280 pounds. And I think that, you know, if Nevada is going to have a size advantage in that regard, because if you look at the guys that Nevada has on their offensive line, for example, they've got, you know, 3 or 4 guys who are over 300 pounds. So to me, it makes sense to basically let not only Butler, but let Kincaid loose and see what he can do.
Excellent point, sir. This is a game. Well, I mean, like, I don't know if I'm thinking that because of what Wyoming's done the past couple of years, that I shouldn't be confident of them winning, but they're 2-0 in league play, 4-2 overall, beat Air Force and Colorado State, playing at Reno. Reno's actually playing at Mackey Stadium, one of the toughest places to play in the country. I just think we need to talk. We haven't talked enough about Wyoming, so I'll switch to that side because we've been doing a ton of Nevada, at least offensively. What did Fresno run against Nevada? Didn't Dante O'Neill have like almost 200 yards? James, sorry, not O'Neill. Really big game, though. 30 plus, like, nearly 200 yards, correct? So what will Brian Hill do against this defensive line?
That's because Nevada's defensive line is still lousy. Oh, man, I don't even know. I mean, it's not only the defensive line, but, like, probably. I think I may have mentioned this in a preview podcast previously. Not to bring up the havoc rate again, but the Nevada backers are dead last in the country in that regard. So they've gotten pushed around more often than not. And I think that, you know, Wyoming's probably licking their chops for this particular matchup. To me, I think one thing to keep an eye on is, you know, is Josh Allen going to be able to take care of the football the way that he has in the last couple weeks? Because, you know, he was perfect against Air Force. He didn't have any interceptions. He didn't have any interceptions against Colorado State. And, you know, on the whole, he's been good, but he had that really critical interception at the end against Eastern Michigan.
That's only two games.
Of course,
games.
He had kind
two,
of the fourth quarter meltdown
against Nebraska.
Yeah,
two of the six games. That's only games he has picked.
So while on the whole, he's been... Yeah, but on the other hand, his production has dipped a lot in those last two games as well. Like, his completion percentage against CSU was under 40%. And against the Falcons last week, it was only 55%. So... Is there cause for concern there? I don't know. But I think that Nevada has playmakers in the secondary that can, you know, create opportunities for the offense.
Will Sonny Rufus play quarterback this game? With the bust out the triple option again? And
things like that. They haven't.
That's something to look for.
I have no idea. I mean, but I think that, you know, the DBs that are good enough to make plays. They haven't had a lot of opportunities to do it so far this year, but that's something to watch out for too. If they win the turnover battle, I think that's really
it as well, because I don't believe
but I have
Mr. Brian Hill fumbles all that often. And Josh Allen, like, he's done well. Yeah, Nebraska game, that's the one.
Yeah, exactly.
And not to say take it away because it happened, but he's been pretty good with the ball, despite forcing when they're down big. Every other game, they've been in the game for the most part. And so that was just that they're getting down. He's kind of pressing and throwing. But, like, the turnover margin for what I think, I mean, has, I think I mentioned this before, they're still, it's the same as it was last week. They're still plus 0.5. And that includes those five interceptions in one game. They've only lost, they've lost more fumbles than I thought. Sorry, they've lost five fumbles. I thought it was less than that. But regardless, they're still 0.5 plus three on the year. And again, like, if you take away a couple of those picks, they could be sitting at, like, plus 7 or 8, but they happen. But even being on the positive side is a big deal for them. And I don't see them losing the turnover margin unless, for some reason, Wyoming starts throwing the ball because they need to throw the ball. Like, there's, like, Brian Hill's ineffective and can't move the ball very well, which seems unlikely that he'll be stopped enough to force Wyoming to throw more than they want. So maybe I'm flipping around. I think Wyoming wins and probably wins pretty big. And we'll be officially one more game from bowling being etched in pen. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, there'll be one win away at that point. And I'm coming with you. I like Wyoming in this game. Not to blow them out.
I think a little bit more than that, but I think the 4.5 is easy money if you can get it. All right, so that's our show. It's our games this week. We've went longer than I expected. We're sitting at 67 minutes. We did discuss some Big 12 nonsense.
That's because we give...
Hopefully sound good enough through a tin can, or a tin can, like somebody allegedly said.
Hopefully.
But... Oh, my goodness. Not going to get into anything. Let's move on. Stop reacting to everybody. But anything else we need to add about anything? One quick thing I do want to add. We have our basketball countdown to look for some hoops coverage. A pair of Aggies at 25 and 24 right now. So we may. Nice. You don't have to be involved in this because you're very busy. There could be a potential basketball show we might do semi-regularly. So look for that perhaps next month. No promises, but that's what we're saying. We got our guy Eli, who, if he could squeeze in some time with us in Pac-12 content, basketball, we'll see what we can do. But maybe, maybe not. We'll have at least written content, but that's our show for this evening. As I'm about to, I thought I was going to sneeze again, like I said before the show. That sneeze has not came through yet, so it'll probably come right when I close it or end the show. But that's it for tonight. Again, Stitcher, SoundCloud. We're working on Stitcher. I don't know why random episodes are missing, so go to Blog Talk Radio to listen to the show. Everything's come clear. I've tried Pocket Cast. People use Overcast, working well. iTunes is smooth sailing. SoundCloud, when I remember to upload it there, because it doesn't automatically upload, it goes there as well. And leave us a review. We got a lot of people listening. I know a lot of people liked our preview of Hate with Connor, I guess recap of Hate or something. I don't know. We talked to Connor about as PC does every week. So if you miss that show, that's good. And also, I guess you and me, Matt, we did our mid-season show a week too early. I thought week 6 was good, right? Go back and listen to it. We give Wyoming a lot of credit in that recap, as well as some good other teams. But that's our show. Check us out, mwcconnection.com, and we'll be back next week. And as always, we are biased against your...